Welcome to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence. My name is Greg Williams. I'm live from the awesome and most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas. And if you don't believe me, just look at the sunset right behind me from my home's window. Is that not awesome and beautiful? You're going to see us fade right into complete darkness here in just a few minutes. Been traveling today. I spoke this morning till about 11 o'clock at church, and then I got on the road and drove about 235 miles to San Antonio to speak there at 3, got done at 4:15 and drove 235 miles back. And here I am, just kind of slid in. I put it in park and ran up, took the elevator up to my place and ready to have one of the, I think, going to be one of the most memorable and best interviews that we've had possibly in the history of our program. So if you know somebody that wants to hear a good interview tonight, get on the horn right now, text them, email them and say, hey, you want to tune in tonight. If you want to get involved, there's two different ways to do it tonight. You can get right on the Facebook page. And it looks like my son's got that up and running, Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page. And you can get on there and watch it live. But you can also comment, put questions in there, and I'll read them and check them after the first commercial break. Or you can call 888-627-6008. And TJ, with that awesome radio voice of BBS Radio, will say, good evening, how can I help you? And he will patch your question right through to our guest tonight and to me. And we'll let you have a comment or a question. And you can stay on until we're finished answering it if you want to make sure you hear it live from us. So would love to have you just join in. We always like to think that if you just give us 45 to 50 minutes every Sunday night, you will be able to leave with something that's going to make you look at life a little deeper, have a better quality of life, or just pick up a tool or two or a tip or two of something that will help you get through, or one of your friends possibly, in the coming week. And speaking of that, I always like to take just a few seconds, not very long at the front. And besides that, I've been speaking all day, so I'm going to kind of hush and let our guests talk most of the time tonight. But I always like to just share maybe what I've learned this week. You know, sometimes you have great weeks and you just get a lot of progress done. Sometimes you have great days and you just think, wow, I conquered the world today. But, you know, there's days that sometimes you don't. So at the end of the day, whether you choose to go with it or flow with it, resist it or change it or hide from it, let me just remind you, and it may be a secret, I don't know, but I'm just going to remind you real quick if you want to lean in. Life goes on. So if you didn't get accomplished what you wanted to get accomplished today, you get an opportunity tomorrow to do it all over again, or to do absolutely nothing. The issue is, it's your choice. Your choice. Don't allow anyone else to make that choice for you. You need to put on your big boy and big girl pants and choose what you want. And one of the things that I think would be good choices as you look around just look at who are you spending the most and majority of your time with. Choose to make this coming week the time that you spend with the right people. Then make a choice this week to concentrate on where you're at right now. Yeah, what has happened to us in the past, and you're going to hear some horrific things that happened in a person's past, our guest tonight's past. But if you keep dwelling on that and reliving that, it'll end up taking you down that same road over and over and over. So you have to wake up in the morning deciding to concentrate on what you're going to accomplish today in the present. And then in that process, try to make a choice, a deliberate choice, and only a choice that you can make, to have the right attitude, to not be, you know, listening to the naysayers, talking down to yourself, and I have a tendency to do that, but to try to have as a positive attitude as you can, even though life isn't perfect possibly for you right now. It's never perfect, is it? If it is, beware, because probably tomorrow something's going to happen to mess that up. Make a choice to endure the pain. Maybe there's something that you're afraid to say. Maybe there's something that you're afraid to love. Maybe there's somewhere that you're afraid to go. Maybe it's going to hurt you. Maybe it's going to hurt you because it matters and because it's going to expand your horizons. Remember, sometimes pain isn't always a bad thing. Sometimes it's just a way to force us one step farther in our own personal growth. And then, like I said a while ago, ignore all those people that are in that corner talking negative about you. I don't know the whole story about our guest tonight, but I have a feeling that there's going to be people that was in his corner that was saying things, hey, forget this. You can't do this anymore. You're no good. You've been broken. You're a broken vessel. I got that a lot too. And we have to avoid all of those naysayers. And in that process, start feeding ourselves the good things and then appreciate what you have. And then the last thing, because somebody could probably be listening tonight and go, Greg, what in the world did you drive 480 miles round trip today to do? Was it all about money? No, it wasn't about money. It was about making an impact on the world. And if me going to speak for an hour and 15 minutes impacted one person's life in San Antonio, and I want to welcome them, they may be listening tonight on the program, I want to welcome them, then I achieved what my goal was today, was to make a positive impact, was to make a positive difference in someone's life. And let me tell you, being the richest man or the richest woman in the cemetery doesn't matter. But going to bed every night knowing that you made a positive difference with sharing the good and the bad things that's happened to you in your life to a world, it can matter. And making that difference is what it's all about. Making that positive, positive impact. And I think tonight our guest knows what it takes to be able to take media, to be able to take movies, to be able to take productions and theater and all of this technology and create and tell a story. Because Anthony Touton from Newfoundland up in Canada, I mean, way up north there. I think he may be in Quebec tonight. We'll find out when he comes in. Is a trained actor, filmmaker, media developer, and he graduated from some of the most prestigious schools and academies and education that money could buy, but it was prestigious. He was on the edge of his career to be, and he was, an award-winning producer, director, writer. All of that was just, life was going so awesome for him. But something happened. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And then how that impacts you and how to get up and go after it again and make it happen again. It's my privilege tonight, all the way from our neighbors in the lovely country of Canada, to welcome Anthony to the program. Anthony, are you there? Can you hear me?
I am, Dr. Williams. Thank you very much. That was a very gracious and tremendous introduction. You said some very powerful things, and actually, I've come to learn that there are no coincidences in life. There are only signs. And what's interesting is that instead of saying coincidentally, I experienced some of what you put out there in your introduction today. And just within the last few hours, as I decided to meditate and brainstorm on this opportunity with you, given that you are a survivor yourself, given that you have the ability, both as a doctor to help others and as a writer and author as well, but also to provide me this opportunity. I'm currently in Hamilton on the border of Stony Creek here in Ontario. And what's interesting is that we had this, you know, for the listeners, we had this opportunity to possibly do the interview on Labor Day weekend, and instead we chose for today. And up until today, I had a bit of a different approach. And I know we had some great interaction, emails going back and forth, and I really appreciate that. But what I want to say is, you mentioned friends and naysayers and whatnot over the years. And of course, we can talk all about that, but that also gets into a bit of the category of regrets. And right now, what I'll say is, in order for me to be able to present myself the way that I am right now, is not only through the grace of God, but also through the graces of some people who became very fast friends and understood both the opportunities that I had as well as some missed opportunities. And there were some, again, coincidences with respect to people they knew through the years who were connected to friends of my families. And it was just crazy how it all came together, crazy in a positive way. So I'm very blessed to have this opportunity to speak with you and speak with your listeners. And of course, cliches are cliches because they're true. And the old cliche, like you said earlier and alluded to, if you can help one person, like when you were speaking in San Antonio at church today in Texas, and I'd love to, I've always wanted to visit Texas, but if you can help just one person, then you've done something. And what I found was, by virtue of, and I'll tell you specifically what I did, I jotted down some notes, some things that my late father, Jeff, who died far too soon due to pancreatic cancer, which really shook me up and I think was the cause of this recent trajectory, which led me to this point. And had he not passed away, I think things would be dramatically different. But having said that, I decided to jot down some things that he inspired me over the years with. And one of them was the book Man's Search for Meaning by Dr. Viktor Frankl. And I started jotting down these things, and I don't mean to be belabored in saying this, I'll get to my point, but I think it will segue into where you want me to possibly go with this, to possibly help at least one other person. And hopefully there's more than that, because you've done some great work. And I think by guiding me here, we could get to some interesting territory, because the fact is, I suddenly found myself writing probably for the second or third time, very specifically about the incident which took place on my father's birthday, December 11th, 2002, after having worked as the face and media developer and quick time video section creator for a web listings site in St. John's, Newfoundland, which was started by a great guy who became like a mentor to me, Peter Wilkins, who was from England. And he gave me the opportunity. I was heavily involved in theater. He gave me the opportunity to create the web video section for his entertainment listing site. and be the host. And I had a great friend, John Watson, who I went to Ridley College with, boarding school here in Canada, where my dad and my grandfather went. And everything was looking great. And unfortunately, on December the 11th, my dad's birthday, I decided to leave the birthday dinner. There was a snowstorm outside. I was in St. John's, Newfoundland. Civ'd. We had moved on from. I had interviewed Kiefer Sutherland there. I had interviewed people like Jonathan Torrens here in Canada. And like I said, did some great work. I felt with John Watson and a few other people, a good friend of mine. And I was trying to get my documentary about my great-grandfather, who had the first Kodak distributorship, Teutons Photography, and was a Maronite born in Damascus, Syria, and came over in 1903. And I was trying to do a documentary about him, and I just to use this opportunity, I eventually did recently in 2021 win the award for best documentary short in San Diego of all places, because I finally completed the project with the support of the National Film Board of Canada here. But I had been hoping to get it off the ground at that time back in 2002. And on December 11th, I unfortunately decided to go to a hockey game with a friend of mine. And from there, somebody slipped something in my drink. And the worst incident that could have happened took place. And it wasn't this scenario that would have happened for any other reason except for the existence of the date rape drug and Rohypnol and whatnot, which was quite pervasive in Newfoundland at that time. And it's very much an island culture there. We're an island most easterly point in North America, St. John's, Newfoundland, Cape Spear, and the oldest city in North America. And that's where the darkest night, to use a word from your show title, happened. And tonight, I, with my friend, wrote out some of the specifics that I never really shared before. And I have those pages in front of me, should we choose to have me read them or read excerpts. But it's not too long. It's just that I had this emotion come over me, and I realized the opportunity that I had with you, which was to let people know that we're all in repair, we're never alone, and you can, you know, get yourself out of that paper bag, even if it's with your forceps. You know, it's like a rebirth. And that's where I'm at tonight, today with you. But I guess I'll throw it back to you to say that unfortunately on that night, I was, like I said, drugged and brutally raped. And
you were at a hockey game, in your drink, someone slipped another male friend of yours?
It was after the hockey game. And it wasn't just, it was a male acquaintance that I had worked with some shifts as a busboy at an establishment in St. John's on Water Street, where my great-grandfather was known as Tony Teuton, the heaviest man on Water Street. So it's kind of filled with a lot of irony that something like this would happen to me. But it happened to scores of others. And instead of ending up living in a mansion, as the perpetrator did, being supported by whomever was supporting him after the incident, I was in the position where I ended up on on death's doorstep. I ended up suicidal at different points. I didn't want to go on. The pain was too ferocious. And I believe that it was either the drugging on December the 11th that happened after the hockey game, when we went downtown to the bar, where in establishments that are on Water Street in St. John's, where I had worked in my hometown before Civ and before all that. But I kept fighting, and I realized that at some point it's going to pop. At some point, the truth always comes out. And what I faced in terms of the backlash after the incident, including being misdiagnosed when I ended up in London, Ontario for a Pearl Jam concert and ended up at the hospital there, and then being on the wrong medications, and this information being suppressed for so many years, and hearing about it having happened to so many others, and having people doubt me and not understand that if I were to relay, even what I wrote tonight, with the exact verbiage and words used to properly describe what took place and what I can remember, because I couldn't remember everything. I got knocked out and came to as it was happening to me. So God only knows what truly happened. I can only say that I pray, not so much for myself, but for the others that didn't have the opportunity to eventually get some of the support from prominent and you know, helpful, understanding people that know what goes on out there, but that faced what I faced and then couldn't move forward and either didn't get the support from our medical system here that's necessary, or found themselves in a position that they themselves couldn't find the strength to move on. And I want them to know that they are enough, and that as President Obama aptly stated when Senator Todd Akin made the ridiculous statements that he made down in your part of our woods, because we're all on the same land. President Obama came out and made the statement that rape is rape. And what that means is that when I was questioned by the police, who said that the perpetrator said that this was consensual and therefore he got off, no pun intended, what that allowed him to do was, and I'm not afraid to say this, I was before, but if you abuse power, you lose it. Yet if you do not use power, you also lose it. And I guess this is my chance to tell you that we know what happened. And thankfully, I'm not back in my hometown. I'll never look at it the same way. But it was a blatant cover-up. And the numbers of the types of people that this happened to after the fact are just off the charts.
Do you believe that you were not only abused by this individual in a horrendous act of selfishness and crime to abuse you in the way he did, but do you feel that the systems, the support, the stigma, all of that also added to the depth of the hurt and the pain of a man that has experienced what you experienced during that evening? Does that just put fuel on the fire of the pain?
To the extent that I think it was a setup, I believe that somebody else drugged me. I know that they did. We got access to that information. People who were dealing the drugs came forth because they had seen the impact that this had had on me. I mean, it was literally a switch went off. And I know that I have some friends who I probably haven't spoken to in a while that are, I believe, tuning in tonight. And they just didn't know what to do because I'm Anthony Tuton. I was a trained actor. I, of course, had my challenges. I have ADHD, but the switch was so specific that who cares? Like, who cares if somebody's gay or straight? I'm straight, but the point is, this was an atrocious, violent act that could have only happened if a drug was in my system. And if I were to read to you some of the specifics that I wrote down, which led me to get very emotional. It was very, actually, I want to thank you because it was cathartic. Because if I had said it to you initially, if we did a pre-interview, it wouldn't have been like two guys who have survived something. Obviously, you getting to a position where you are able to help so many other people by sharing your story and by having the technical prowess that you do and matched with the experiential element. But I had a catharsis come over me where I just totally broke down, and I had to kind of wipe my eyes and clean myself up quickly to ensure, as you were running up the stairs to your beautiful spot there with darkness in the background now, but what was a beautiful sunset. to get to this point. And what I do know is that I told my friend, I said, no matter what happens, it's here. They're in these pages, and it's written down. And there's so many specifics that were overlooked. And I'll go so far as to say that I believe there was an element of damage, like brain damage or something that may have been done by lack of oxygen or by the actual drugging. Because I was never the same person. And what I can also say is with respect to the PTSD was diagnosed, but I didn't find out until years after what PTSD really meant. I always associated it with soldiers coming back from the war and shell shock. I didn't understand that it's a clinical diagnosis that's so severe that if the symptoms become exacerbated and you end up in the wrong place at the wrong time, you're going to get taken out in a split second. You're going to be misinterpreted. You're going to be misjudged. I'm blessed by the individuals who could see something more deeply within me. When I'd have breakdowns, I went through, I mean, this is over 20 years ago. I went through bouts of enormous pain where I couldn't sleep for days and I'd have to act like I had, and people would be accusing me of being on drugs that I wasn't on, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't want to get into all that victimization content. I want to suggest that there is a way out and that people are enough, but I didn't feel like I was enough. I was doubting myself. I was drowning my sorrows, not unlike what a soldier would do with respect to turning to alcohol and other substances. It was a coping mechanism, but I was never able to be at my fullest. So even though I won the entrance scholarship to film school after the fact, and I met some of my heroes, I couldn't be the Anthony that I wanted to be, that I would have been had I had those opportunities prior. So that's where I was really acting. I was acting to get through life. And I watched a clip with Marlon Brando the other night where he refers to acting as survival. And I found that very intriguing because he's obviously one of the greatest actors, male actors of all time. And to hear him say that with respect to life, having trained as an actor, and like I've never been, like I was in theater, right? Like I was never back on stage after that. I've been in front of the camera sometimes, but I think that's why I went behind the camera. Maybe, you know, everything happens for a reason, and I'm meant to be a filmmaker and I was meant to do the things that I did, but the opportunities were few and far between. From a social standpoint, it was also brutal. Because suddenly this guy is free to do it to anybody he wants. Now, I've received threats over time, and threats are not real unless, you know, they happen, right? So you know that there, you can feel it out. And, but there is some fear and trepidation that comes with that. But that also speaks, I should say, to the people that helped me out to get to this point, Dr. Williams, and to be a guest on your show. And that's what I want to be for others. I want them to know that fear can subside. The fear drifts away as you move forward. Time does heal. And one of the great things is that community is what's important. I found the men's groups very challenging because, and sorry, I don't mean to ramble. I'm just trying to get the information out. I found the men's groups that I was in for PTSD very challenging because I was listening to the others speak and they didn't have some of the same issues I ran into, which were financial, because nobody could invest in me. I had the talent. So, okay, so this project's going to happen because I'm using a Dogma 95 style or whatever, and I'm adhering to a Bible, and I can, and I, you know, in terms of filmmaking, and I can move this project forward, but I'm going to deal with a standardized approach because this is the only camera I have access to, or utilizing what's available to me at those times. But my creativity went down and I found myself in a position where I couldn't utilize my skills to their utmost potential. And maybe my skills are best used by virtue of having this type of opportunity and speaking with you. But Dr. Williams, one of the things that I thought as well was that if I didn't share my story, if I didn't go public, so there was a CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation article, which came out April 30th, and that's the first time I went public. And the reason I did that was because I was inspired by an interview which won an award out of New York, and it was conducted by my friend, or a guy I know, Tom Power, who's also from Newfoundland, and he's on a major show here called Q, and he interviewed Bono from U2. And I watched that interview, and it was the first time that I saw one of my, you know, cohorts from Newfoundland bringing up what was called Mount Cashel and the Mount Cashel orphanage crisis in Newfoundland, which is where the Christian Brothers systematically sexually assaulted for decades the orphans. And I've gotten to know some of them over the years. And what I realized was I was in that category, and by virtue of this. And it's very challenging because there's a culture back in Newfoundland and a very, you know, island based set of scenarios where it takes like 3 years for something that's like happening in central Canada or the US to make it there. So we're a little late on the uptake. And finally, I heard Tom Power ask Bono what he thought about, you know, bringing it up, and what he thought about the, you know, what he thought about religion and what he thought about these types of scenarios and why he didn't trust religion, just like I learned not to. Because we grow up watching the news, hearing all about the orphanage and Mount Cashel and how horrendous it all was. And here I had essentially gone through the same thing, but it was like in the blink of an eye, one night. And it was really hard because I could understand right away the need for me to share my story. And so that's why I chose to move forward. And a girl named the great reporter Elizabeth Witten wrote this article, came out April 30th, and I knew my life was going to change. It's just in a couple of sentences that they referred to the sexual assault as having changed my life. But I found some strength in that interview / conversation and Bono's calm, cool, I guess you could maybe even say rage, you know, like with respect to him understanding it. And I knew then that I had to speak out. And this is an extension kind of that. And what I want to say is that one of the things that was hardest, and maybe other survivors have experienced this, when they feel they're not enough, when they're in repair, because we all are, right? I mean, that's essentially what life is. And you know, learning how to navigate through those hurdles and challenges. I realized that there were people that I was convinced, they knew something had happened to me, but they thought it had something to do with me, that there was an issue that I had. And then doctors would put a label on certain things, but they may have been exacerbated symptoms, and I don't mean to get too complex or whatever. At the end of the day, it's PTSD and it's exacerbated symptoms. And if not treated properly, it can mask and mimic bipolar disorder. It can mask and mimic schizoaffective disorder. And then you get caught in a rabbit hole and a quagmire that changes everything. And then you say, is this all I am? You know, and then invariably there's a person there, kind of like yourself right now, or not kind of, like yourself, who makes them believe, you know, a prime mover. And that's when you realize you're not alone and that there's no reason to really be scared. It's not going to happen to you again. Not everybody's a rapist. Not everybody has it in their mindset that I'm going to take advantage of this one person, regardless as to whether or not the perpetrator remembers anything that he may or may not have done to me. The bottom line is, until now and until recently, I was afraid to speak about it. I'd be filming downtown for my documentary about my great-grandfather in St. John's, and somebody would tip him, and he'd be walking right by me. you know, as I'm filming the old buildings and whatnot. And if you wrote this stuff, nobody would believe you. You know, nobody would believe that this is the case. And I want to say to the people that stuck by me that I really, really appreciate it. And from the bottom of my heart, I apologize for the ways I reacted. But I think I said to you when you asked for some of the key points that I wanted to address, I said, you know, the incident, and in brackets, I put, I should have stayed down. Because I believe that if I had not come to the morning after, when I woke up alone in a house where I had no idea not only where I was, whose house it was getting dark. The bottom line is there was $10 on my jeans. There was a picture of a couple, 19th century picture. It was circularly framed. I think it was like sepia. I don't even think it was black and white, you know? And I remember these things, and I was like, and there was blood. And I was, and the fact that it took me, you know, several days to end up at the hospital, the fact that I was in what I believe now, based on my research and experience, was a firm state of psychosis. Ultimate shock. I remember this is right before Christmas. I'm going to even make this statement, and I haven't gotten into the specifics of how it led up to that, from having found myself alone at the end of the night without my friends at the establishment before being thrown into a cab. So obviously I was under the influence of something. I hadn't been doing drugs that night myself. I had been drinking, but I remembered like a rock glass of Guinness, you know, continuously being in front of me. You know, I remember people staring at you like it was, I know what happened. And, you know, they know what happened. But the bottom line is that through the grace of God, I somehow made it out. And I apologize that I'm pouring this out, but I just want to say, if this is my last opportunity, based on certain things that happened recently, to speak out here in Canada, Canada is not the nation it portrays itself to be if there's no security and no ability for people to come forward, because they're afraid that the pseudo-democracy will have a blemish on its face internationally, or whatever the case may be. And I say this because there's people that know that this...
Anthony, I want to take... We got to take a break real quick. We'll regroup, come back on the other side of this. On the other side of this commercial break, I really want to dig into the aftermath, what happened, and how you dealt with it now. What's life going to be like for you? We're going to have about 20 minutes when we get back to finish the story, to go full circle. But I want you to get the opportunity to say what you want. But I want to find out, as we turn the corner, what kind of strength, where did it come from? What have you learned? What helps? What doesn't? And what are you planning on doing in the future with this to reach out and give other people hope? So we're going to do that right on the other side of this only commercial break we're taking tonight. 888-627-6008. And we'll be right back with the final segment with Anthony Torn. Be right back. Hang with us.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1. For the next episode of Breaking the Silence.
Welcome back. We have our guest tonight, and we're going to finish up the final part of the program with him, Anthony Hutong. And I'm probably mispronouncing that, Anthony, but I hope I'm close anyway. But it's T-O-O-T-O-N. Were you the one who looked that up?
T as in Tom. T as in Tom, O-O, T as in Tom, O-N. Yeah, it's pronounced Tuton. But some people up here, yeah, some people mispronounce it Tuton. So when I was at boarding school, they used to call me Rootin' Tuton.
Wonderful. Okay, now, so Anthony, you was a realization, and it's come to we even today, of you writing these instances down in front of you. Did you find that therapeutic? Was that healing for you to put it on paper? Is that the first time you ever put it down on paper?
Yeah, to the extent that if I didn't have my friend whose house I'm here in a family home in Hamilton, which they call the Hammer, and you should visit. It's a great Canadian city, Steel Town. So I have some great memories with my friend John Watson here. But I'll tell you, yeah, I'm actually filled with tremendous emotion. So I do apologize because I really thought that I'd keep it together a little bit better. But I in the break there, I want to say, Dr. Williams, that I think it's amazing that you broke your silence after 30 years. And I know I'm talking to the right guy with respect to that. And I hope that that I didn't throw you off by spilling what I did. But to answer your question, it was extremely cathartic. And I literally, I broke down. I wrote this stuff out. I got to a certain point, which is when I made it to the gas station near the house where I woke up, where I came to, with nobody around me. And then my friend knocked at the door and came in, and I actually started chatting, and I started kind of shaking, and I actually broke down. Now, in the past, what I would do is immediately try to self-medicate or cope with it in whatever way possible, freak out, whatever, to my chagrin, and be blamed for it, for those things, right? But in this case, I was able to keep it together, and I actually am very proud of myself for having written this out, and actually it's because of you that I was able to do this, and so there's something very cathartic about it. It would certainly be triggering, and I thought about that, and I said to my friend, you know, I don't want to just say, hey, listen, I got this, you know, holy grail, I want to read this, and you're a writer, and, you know, I finally got it out, you know, this is the third time I tried. Like, it's very succinct, and I, like I said, I know what happened, and it's a violent, aggressive, physical act, but by having written it down, whether I shared or not, I know that this had nothing to do with something being consensual, something being gay or straight. This was a brutal, brutal rape. I even felt
just like when a child gets abused. This was not your fault. You being there, there's nothing that you did that caused that rape. Nothing.
I remember I had this great friend back in St. John's, who shall remain nameless for himself. And he knew what had happened, and it happened to a friend of his. And I don't know how well that friend is doing right now. And that really worries me. This mutual friend, we were having he said to me, he said, why don't you just tell people that you're gay? It's like, why don't you just, like, if this is such an issue in this small town mentality setup that we have, we know what happened to, like, in other words, like, in the underground or like on the street, those that knew, right? Like, there was a fox in the hen house. There was a wolf in sheep's clothing. The reason I know who did it to me was because my left arm was pinned. And when I came to, I remember thinking, this is the worst pain of my life. And I studied Jeet Kune Do, Bruce Lee's martial art, and I'm left-handed. And I tried with all my might to swing back my right arm, and he caught it. And that's when I saw his face. And he was, and I know this. I've even said I'm willing to take a lie detector test. And I don't know if you know this, but victims aren't allowed to do that through the justice system in Canada, right? It's only the perpetrators and those that break the law that to my knowledge can do that. But I know specifically what happened, and of course it comes from dribs and drabs and pieces back and forth, but it's so crazy because I want to say this: when I would see the individual or when he would walk by me coincidentally or whatever, I just get sick. I would just have this, and then I'd go into a state which would be one of intense anger. And I regret so much, and will probably have to deal with this. Those aspects of the aftermath of me becoming a person that I wasn't, the antithesis of Anthony McGraw-Touton, the antithesis of who I was brought up to be, and to have exhibited that behavior. And to not only my own chagrin, it's nothing to do with ego, to have hurt others when I really wanted to thank them for having helped me and understood that they couldn't understand. And this one other thing that I wanted to say, I've said this to a few other people. I believe that whether you're awake or not, when a sexual act takes place, that is associated with violence. I believe like it impacts the victim to such a capacity where it's almost like embedded in their DNA or something. Like it's actually, there's muscle memory, there's, and I think in certain respects, it takes 20 or 30, it takes decades or a generation to get over this. And if you can survive, then you can get to a position where you are. In terms of what you were saying before the break, having that catharsis and trying to help other people, I don't want to trigger other people. Like I would never want to say something, even in a controlled interview, like this one per se, where I could potentially say something and you have to be professional, and then you are, and then it triggers you. You know, it's that one thing. That's why I was so fearful of sharing, even with my friend, what's written here. And I know that that's very intense, what I just shared, in terms of why I know the perpetrator was who the perpetrator was, to say nothing of the fact that when I was in the state that I was a couple of days later, he had tracked me down and put his hand on my forearm and said he was sorry. Sorry. But that never came up with the police, right? So the bottom line is, we're talking about a scenario here where the other victims knew that because it was public enough, but never made it to the media side of it, because it was public enough that this horrendous thing had happened to me, because I became the social pariah, because I was getting in fights, because I was, you know, like utilizing my energy in the wrong ways, and God, please forgive me. I became a shadow of myself, and I just want the other individuals to know that there is forgiveness, you know. And the other thing too is that when we get to this stage, there's a maturity level that is necessary to reach, and maybe you can speak to this. I know you have in your books. As you've alluded to before, where you as Neil Young, the great Canadian and international musician, one of our gifts to the world, has sung, there comes a time, and this is my time where I say, look, you know what, throw it at me. I honestly, to thine own self be true. I just want to help others to know that you can find the people or people similar to the ones that have helped me that haven't had the same thing happen to them, but understand enough to know, okay, this was this guy before the incident, and let's help him get back to that. Let's help him rejuvenate.
So this happened in 2002. The story came out April of this year?
April 30th, yeah.
Of 2023. 21 years before the story came out about that? To where?
Yeah.
So did you hold all of that in, hoping it would go away and just allow it to rage inside of you?
Not necessarily.
Person?
I was the guy that would go to, you know, the dingy bars. Like, karaoke was my outlet, you know. Right. And I'm actually going to mention something to you. There's something very interesting. I met one of my heroes. He knows who he is. And without him, I certainly wouldn't be here right now. And I was around 2003. I was about to give up. And this came out with my friend after, like, just before the interview, after I was writing this stuff, and she came to check on me. And before, as I was breaking down, I played this song that my friend had, that I was staying with after the incident, when I was renting a room off of him in a house in St. John's. He was trying to help me out, and this very, very prominent, huge musician. The song came on. It was a song from my youth, from one of the biggest albums when I was in grade 10. And that performance is literally what snapped me out of what would have kept me down, so to speak, that night. I had made the decision that I wasn't moving forward. And this is before film school. This is back 2002, 2003. And that is what propelled me. And actually, in writing this stuff and playing that song for my friend, I was able to quickly get myself back on track to realize, okay, I have a responsibility here. My goal is to try to get my story out, not for myself, to try to help other people. And right. If there is any catharsis through that, great. But yeah, that stuff was like, I mean, like I said, in my DNA, like it, I mean, it's what's prevented me from maintaining relationships with women. It's what's prevented me from maintaining some of my friendships. I don't have kids because I believe because of that, that which was, you know, embedded and kept within me. Yeah. And
Anthony, we only have like a minute left. They're going to go to the next live show and cut us off. What can you say, because I mean, to bring this full circle, what would you say to somebody that's listening tonight that says, hey, wait, I have a similar story, not of course the same circumstances or anything, but the same type of abuse or hurt or pain or violation of them, man or woman? How do I get by? How do I get through the night? What would you tell them if they were looking at you in your eyes right now? How do I get through the night? What's your advice?
Again, all cliches are cliches because they're true. So what I would say is, to thine own self be true. Don't face it head on if it's going to hurt other people. There's no excuse for hurting others because you're going through pain yourself. However, there are people out there, and many of them in my case, I'll try to be quicker, many of them in my case are people that understood with that look in the eye that will help you such that you can find sanctity and you can be the person that you were born to be, and that it doesn't define us. What somebody else has done to us, as egregious as it may be, ultimately does not define us. You can reinvent yourself. There is rebirth, and pray.
Amen. Pray. That's what, Anthony, thank you for sharing. And before we close out tonight, I personally want to applaud your courage. And I think you writing those items down was for you. Hang on to those. keep adding to that, keep adding memories and thoughts and different details to that, because I think once you get all of that stuff out of you, the healing process can start to begin in the depth that it needs to begin in. And it's a slow process. It is a process. But I hope that you being allowed to have this hour sharing some of your story with us tonight has not only helped you, but it's helped me and it's helped people around the world this evening. I appreciate and applaud your courage to tell the story. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It's been a privilege and an honor. Thank you, sir.
We'll be in touch with you. I promise you, we will be emailing and texting and calling on the phone periodically for quite a while. So let's stay in touch. Okay, my friend?
Thank you, Dr. Williams. I really appreciate it.
Okay, let's have you back on. And maybe when you have your book out, when you're going to tell the whole world everything that happened, that could be a possibility. But welcome and thank you for being with us on the program tonight.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. As we do each and every week, I always like to, especially on not a dark show, but a very situational show that didn't have much laughter in it. That's life. These things happen. But I want to let you know, as Anthony has shared with you tonight, as I share with you each and every week, no matter what has happened to you, whether it was yesterday or 25 years ago, it doesn't define who you are. Don't let it keep you down. And there's always, always hope. I promise you that. There's hope. And there are always a few people somewhere in this world that are willing to lean into you and help you on that journey. And it's an honor, Anthony, that you help me and I help you right now on this journey together, whether it's for the next 5 weeks or 5 years. I want to be there for you, and I know you'll be there for me. That's what it's all about. Thank you for joining us tonight. Be with us next week for another live edition of Breaking the Silence from Houston, Texas. God bless. Have an awesome week. And don't forget about the hope. Hang in there.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.